I'm gonna take you on a little ride tonight. I was born in a place, well, that's what Roll Under the Highway is all about. I was born in a place called Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, which in the middle of the 60s was like Liverpool. Hey, it's no laughing matter. It's a cheery matter. But guess who? Burton Cummings and the Devrons, Bach Patricia Overdrive, Neil Young and the Squires, that out of Winnipeg. So my story starts early in Winnipeg. This is all about Winnipeg and traveling down the highway, because the only place to go was out of town. Winnipeg being the middle of North America, the middle of nowhere, means a lot of driving. So way, way back when Canada was being founded by Sir John A. Macdonald and Tim Horton, I had this on the radio. Gotten a cease and desist letter from a band called The Reflections that had a hit just like Romeo and Juliet. They were from Baltimore, so we couldn't use that name. So we sent Shaken all over to the record label, and they said, this is a great song, we want to release it. What's the name of the band? We said, we don't have a name, and so they put out a white label that said Shaken all over, and underneath they put Guess Who. That's how we got the name. Then we got asked to be on the Kingsman Louie Louie tour, the summer of 65. So for us four punks from Winnipeg, to go on the Kingsman Louie Louie tour was amazing, with Dion and the Belmonts and all these other great singers, and it was pretty incredible. But when we left town, this is Chad Allen, The Reflections, we came to Guess Who, the next bands under us all moved up a notch. So when we came back after the summer, the top band in town was Burton Cummings and the Devrons. Then Neil Young and the Squires, then Fred Turner and the Rockin' Devils. Everyone had moved up. We got back, our lead singer, Chad Allen, said, I want to go back to college, nobody knows who I am. My name isn't in the name of the band, everybody calls me Guess Who. Remember that Abbott Costello, who's on first? That was like everywhere, who are you, Guess Who, who's on first, all that stuff. So I figured, gee, we're not the top band here anymore, what do we do? Well, we've got to go to the next band, Burton Cummings and the Devrons, who are now the top band. So I called, my dad went to school with Burton's mother, so I called up his mother and said, hey Rhoda, this is Randy Bachman, and can you send Burton down to our manager's office? But Burton walked in, I said, Chad Allen's quitting the band, going back to University of Manitoba, we want you to be our new lead singer. And he said, I'm in, let me finish two gigs with the Devrons. He joined the Guess Who, and the rest, you know that story. So Burton joins the Guess Who, and we had to get out of town, so the nearest... because all the Devron fans were really mad. And so we went to a thriving metropolis called Regina, which is in Saskatchewan. Woo! So we're in Regina, and Burton's learning our songs, we're learning his songs, we're learning to get along, because when you're in a band, it's like being on a hockey team or football team or something, like suddenly you're put together, and you're not a chosen family because nobody's born, you just choose to be together, you got to live and work and eat and sleep and travel together. And so we're there learning each other's habits and how to get along. And there was a night off, we went to a Joni Mitchell concert, she was brand new, a folk queen at that time. So we go to her place, at the, her gig at the Fourth Dimension, which is a coffee house in Regina. Whole place was sold out. There's an empty table with reserve sign on it. And halfway through one of Joni's songs, in walked these two beautiful ladies, a blonde and a brunette. And I'm sitting at the table with the guys and Guess Who and Burton Cummings. And suddenly I get struck by lightning by these blonde and a brunette. And I didn't really know how to approach a woman or pick anybody up. I was in a family of, there were like five Bachman brothers, and I had three Bachman brothers, and it was all guys. So I said to our road manager, can you go sit at that table with the blonde and the brunette? And if you sit down, introduce yourself. Don't talk to the brunette, just the blonde. Call me over, and then introduce me, and then let me take it from there. So he did that. I asked to take them home, they were sisters. So I got enough courage after I took them home, and the blonde went in the house. I said, the brunette, can I take you out tomorrow night to have a night off? She said, sure. So I went back to her house the next night. I got ushered into a big room that had a plant, a piano, and a couch, no TV, no radio, and it's the first date. You guys know this. I'm early. Is she on time? No, she's late. So she's upstairs, so I'm sitting in this room, and I wander over to the piano, and I've had no training on the piano. But growing up at the age of five, my mother bought me a violin. She was Ukrainian and wanted me to play it at all their house parties. Polkas. So when I got to be about seven, it was pretty lonely playing alone. My brother, who was then a year and a half younger, he was five, he got bought the ultimate polka instrument, the accordion. So a violin's pretty hard. You gotta stand a certain way and you're playing. I'm doing Royal Conservatory of Music, all this certain stance. And when you're five and somebody straps this thing on you, you can't see it. You look down, you can't see this accordion. And you gotta play these notes with your fingers. And you have to pump the bellows with this hand. You gotta go oompa oompa with these fingers. My brother hated it. So used to get him to lie down, turn it sideways, and I'd go pump, and he'd pull it like this. And I'd sit on his knees, and I learned to play in the key of C. So with this formal training on a keyboard, in the house of Regina, waiting for my first date with this brunette, I sat down at the piano and played this. So out of the blue, I showed that to Burton Cummings. We wrote that song in about 15 minutes and had no idea it would change our lives forever. We got invited to be on American Bandstand, and Dick Clark gave us gold records. That was a big deal. Then we got invited to New York City to RCA Records that that song These Eyes was on. We got to meet the head of RCA Records, whose name was Rocco Laganestra. This is my first meeting with what I would call an Italian businessman. So Rocco has this luncheon. There's about 35 people there. Me and the guests who are there, I'm sitting next to Burton Cummings, and Burton, I'm born to be mild. Burton is born to be wild. So together we wrote some good songs, and the clashing was kind of like Mick Jagger and Keith Richards and Lennon and McCartney. The two of us together wrote some really great songs. So we're sitting at this table, and Rocco says, "Congratulations, boys. Thank you, Mr. Laganestra. I want you to do me a favor." "Yes, Mr. Laganestra, what would that favor be?" "I want you to write another song just like These Eyes." So Mr. Wild says, "No way. We're a prairie rock band. We're not doing another ballad." The whole room gets quiet. No one has ever said no to Mr. Laganestra and walked out of the room with their knees intact, right? So I say, "Mr. Laganestra, you've got to understand, we're a prairie rock and roll band. This is the one ballad we wrote that like was a million seller. Like, we don't want to be Gary Peck at the Union Gap, you know, young girl, get out of my mind and all that stuff. We want to rock." And he said, "I'll tell you something, you ain't rocking. Radio will not play a rock song by you guys. They want another ballad. So I'll make it easy. Finish your sandwich." The meeting's over. Go back to Winnipeg. Don't come back to New York until you write another song like These Eyes. Thank you for coming. We get in our car and drive back to Winnipeg. This is from New York to Winnipeg. You know, Winnipeg's like 500 miles north of Minneapolis. We drove everywhere. Drive back. So Burton Cummings went to school with a guy named Daryl Burlingham, who grew up to be a DJ. And he moved to Vancouver. So Daryl calls us up. And I was kind of the leader of the band, so he called me. And he said, "Got a gig for you guys. It's in a place called Nanaimo, BC. Which you've never heard of, except that's where Diana Krall is from." So Nanaimo, BC is halfway up Vancouver Island, and it's like 2,500 miles from Winnipeg. So I say to Daryl, "How much does it pay us?" And he says, $400. So we had a bus at the time. The lights were great, it was $100 each. We get in our bus and drive there, and then you remember this when you were young and you went on vacation. We're in our bus, we're listening to the radio, we're listening to the top hits of the late 60s. And as you leave the town, the radio turns into, and you're scanning, and you get near another town and you get a station. And then you listen to the radio, and then, so they're leaving Winnipeg, going Winnipeg, Portage la Prairie, Brandon, Regina, Moose Jaw, Medicine Hat, right across Western Canada. We keep hearing this song over and over. It's by the Bee Gees. And I figured this is gonna be a hit, because we're hearing it, excuse me, on every radio station. And it went, "In the event of something happening to me, there is something I would like you all to see. It's just a photograph of someone that I knew. Have you seen my wife, Mr. Jones?" So that was the Bee Gees' first big hit, New York Mining Disaster, or "Have You Seen My Wife, Mr. Jones?" So I'm sitting there, and in my mind, and in Burton's mind, is we've got to write a follow-up to These Eyes for Rocco. So I think, well, I've given Burton Cummings the gift of when, if he came on stage here tomorrow and went, boom, boom, you know that was These Eyes, the little simple beginning. So next gift is Pour Moi, it's for me, and I'm going to take this Bee Gees beginning and start the next follow-up song with guitar. It's a very minor chord, very melancholy chord. So I'm going to make it happier. Listen how happy it gets with one note. Minor. Major. Minor. Sad. Happy. 200 miles. 300 miles. Four. So finally Burton says, "You are driving me cuckoo playing that, those three notes over and over and over." And I said, "I'm trying to write a song for Rocco." And he said, "Do you have any ideas beside that crazy beginning?" And I said, "Well, Roy Orbison has a song called crying, so why don't we call this one laughing?
I should laugh, but I cry, because your love has passed me by. You took me by surprise. You didn't realize I was waiting.
So you're going to get like $1,600. Great. Are we playing alone? No, you're the opening act. The headliner's Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention. And a band he discovered called Alice Cooper. And you guys are the opening act. So you play Vancouver, Seattle, Portland, San Francisco. Bert and I could not wait to get to San Francisco. This is about 1967, 68. And we see the picture on Rolling Stone and Time magazine of the kid, the hippie. Blonde hair, flowers, peace sign on his bare chest, playing guitar, singing "If You're Going to San Francisco." And all we wanted to see was a real hippie. There was none in Winnipeg, it was too cold. So we finished the concert. The next day I go down to Haight-Ashbury, the famous corner. And it's like Monday morning. There's nobody there. So I go into a store and I go, "Is this the right Haight-Ashbury?" And the guy goes, "Yeah, I've been in the Navy 26 years. I've been all over the world. This is the only intersection of a Haight and an Ashbury that I know." I said, "So where's all the hippies?" He said, "It's Monday morning, 10 o'clock. They're all at home in bed." But you should have been here on the weekend. Janis was here. The Dead were here. Quicksilver was here. You know, Moby Grape was here. Come back next weekend. I said, "We're going back to Canada. We're a Canadian band." So we figured, well, I'll buy some records. I said, "Guys, so where do we see this hippie?" He said, "Okay, take that bridge, it goes over to Berkeley. The university's there, go to Telegraph Avenue, T-Bone's right at the university, that guy's on the corner there. Get your picture taken with this guy." So we go over there, we meet the guy, buy a bunch of vinyl. I'm about to go put it in my car, because vinyl then was like really heavy, I bought like 20 albums. So I'm going to put them in the trunk of my car. And as I turn down the street and I'm walking to our car, there's three guys coming towards me down the street. Cut off leather jackets, bulging muscles, tattoos. They look like ex-war vets. One's black, one's Mexican, one's white. They give me that glare, like, you know, like they do in the movies when they're going to have a gunfight. That glare, the saloon glare, I call it. And I'm wearing a little badge the mayor of Winnipeg has given us when we leave home. That's a red maple leaf. He says, "So wear this wherever you go, so people around the world will know you're peace-loving Canadians." And he says, by the way, don't get into a fight with an American. They're drafted at 18. This is like the Vietnam War era. They're drafted at 18 on hand-to-hand combat. Unless you've got on hockey skates on ice with a stick, you'll have no chance in a fight. So don't get in a bar fight with these guys. So these guys are walking towards me, giving me the glare, and I figured, oh no, I can't get in a fight, I can't run away, I'm just gonna put these in the car and try to leave. And before I get to my car, a little brown car pulls up, and they hear it coming, because the muffler's dragging, and it roars like a Harley Davidson. That's a little tiny car. And they hear this car, and the two of these guys look at each other and leave. This little car pulls up, a little 5-foot-tall woman gets out and starts yelling at the guy who's left standing there. He's no longer Mr. Macho. He's looking at me, he shrugs, she goes up to him in his face and goes, you no good bum. I know you're here with your buddies checking out all the chicks at the university on Telegraph Avenue. You're supposed to be out looking for a job, and I don't mean reading the want ads. You left me home with the kids. You didn't take out the garbage when you left. Get in the car. The guy shrugs, she slams the door, and she says, furthermore, when you get home, you ain't getting no sugar tonight. LSD they put in her drink, and she was in a coma for a week and then passed away. And the next day on the radio, I'm listening to FM radio, which had just started in Vancouver, and the DJ was playing the first Bob Dylan album before Bob Dylan could sing. So most songs were that kind of thing. But in the middle of the song, after he said the words, she came undone, and I wrote this song for the girl.
Hiding for, it was too late to
All right, Mick Delevy on the vocals. So when we left for that Kingsman Louie Louie tour, the last guy to say goodbye to me was Neil Young. And then when I came back, the first guy to say hello to me was Neil Young. And he said, "What's it like out of Winnipeg?" And I said, "It's great, man. You've got to get out of town." So he bought an old hearse, got in it, and left town. So I'm responsible for his success to this day. So he went to Thunder Bay, met a guy named Steven Stills. They went to LA and started Buffalo Springfield. So when I got home, Neil was like out of town. He came back and he said, "Here's my new band, Buffalo Springfield." And he played me this album and it was amazing. A few years ago, I got invited to Neil Young's birthday party at the Troubadour in LA. So I go down there and I've always loved Steven Stills, him and Neil Young together, and Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, and Buffalo Springfield was the incredible two different voices, two rockin' lead guitars and stuff like that. So I'm at this party and he says, "Two friends of mine want to meet you." I'm like, "Really?" He said, "Graham Nash and Steven Stills." So I go, "Wow." So I've known Graham Nash for a while, so I say, "Hi, Graham," and then I get to meet Mr. Stills, my idol, who's a great singer, great acoustic, and great electric guitar player. So I meet him, and I say, "Steven, you have no idea what an influence you've been on my life, my songwriting, my guitar playing, and how much stuff I've stolen from you." He said, "Yes, I have."
Thank you.
were rocking and rolling. We had These Eyes Laughing, Undone, No Sugar, No Time, and American Woman was number one album and single in the summer of 1970. It was amazing. Then I left the band. I had a medical problem. Spent a couple of months in the hospital. The guess who went on without me? I got Fred Turner, who was in the fourth band, Fred Turner, the Rockin' Devils, to start a band with me. And we were called Backward Turner Overdrive. So in one of our many drives out of Winnipeg, we don't have the bus anymore. We used to have a bus for the guess who. I'm starting over from ground zero. I'm broke. I have no money. I'm in a different band. And we get an American Motors station wagon. Remember those, AMC? Like a weird garbage can with four wheels. And so it had a bench seat in the front, a bench seat in the second one, and then all our gears in the back and on the roof, and we're driving along on the freeway, going from Winnipeg to New Orleans to play Mardi Gras. And we're playing with the Doobie Brothers. We're both brand new bands. It's like 1972. And I'm driving. I get on the freeway, and there's a semi-trailer in front of us, and I go to pull around the guy, and just as I'm going through that, another guy pulls up beside me. They're kind of boxed in, and they're talking to each other on their CB radios, and they decide to slow down. Our license plate says, Friendly Manitoba. So I think I'm going to drop back and pull around both these guys because we've got to get to New Orleans. And then another semi pulls up behind me. So there's three of them and we're stuck in the middle. And they're all talking and laughing on their CB radios. And they're going like 35 miles an hour. And they leave a little gap for me to try to get out. I floor this AMC and of course it just goes, but nothing happens. It doesn't go any faster. So we're kind of stuck. I'm frustrated. I give the guy the 11th finger out the window. He gets really mad. They go like 25 miles an hour. We're boxing. Finally, one of these trucks goes to a truck stop. We need gas. So we follow him to the truck stop. We're going to fill up our tank. And Fred Turner and I, who are the big guys in BTO, we're the loggers, the truckers. We're going to go have a word with this trucker. Truckers are pretty big guys. You might have heard Larry David say, pretty, pretty, pretty big guys. So he gets out of his cab. He looks like a refrigerator with a head on top. Guy's about 6'4", 300 pounds. So I find myself looking up at this guy going, excuse me, sir, you're driving very carelessly. You had us boxed in there. It was very dangerous. You left a little gap. I tried to get through. You cut us off again. And he said, it's no big deal. We're just having fun with you friendly Canadians and you friendly guys from Manitoba. And then he said something that really struck me. He said, it ain't no big deal, buddy. Why don't you just let it ride?
Thank you.
Thank you. And now a challenge for you all, something that's very hard, but it works. Look in the mirror tonight, say I love you to yourself. Love yourself, and only then can you love your companion, then you love your children, then you love the next family. And it's all about looking out for number one.
Thank you.
So a little tidying up of a few stories. I said we were sharing the dressing room with the Doobie Brothers. So when I heard the trucker say that it rhymed, I had these chord, this chord progression. So when I got to the dressing room, I was showing it to Fred Turner. So let me just play the beginning to let it ride. Pretend you're the Doobie Brothers listening. I'll do that again. So I got nothing for that. Any fans of Law and Order? I am. Okay, we just did No Time. Here's Law and Order. No time left for you. I got nothing for that. For the line, she came undone. I've never met Bob Dylan, never sent him a cent, so I broke even on that whole deal. When I sat at the piano and wrote the beginning and then later finished These Eyes, I did marry that brunette. We had 6 kids. We got divorced and lived happily ever after. The proudest thing I have from that is my children, and the oldest is here tonight. My son, Tal, he's got a story and a song that you ladies are gonna love.
Hi.
How's it going?
Good crowd tonight, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, great.
Yeah,
great, eh?
How's it going, eh? Well, this one I wrote,
seems like hundreds and hundreds of years ago now, but it was the late 1990s, and I got my own record deal, and I wrote this number, and I was thinking about that girl in high school that we were all afraid to talk to because she just seemed like she had it all, and we were, you know what it's like when you're a teenage boy, you're really stupid, and the girls seem like they're mature women already, right? Feels okay. It doesn't really change, I guess. Anyway, so I wrote this song about that kind of girl and us kind of feeling tongue-tied around her. And actually, when I recorded it, Dad played rhythm guitar on it.
Yeah, I'm going to play rhythm tonight.
Yeah, you should do the solo. Do the solo tonight.
Well, this is one of Taylor Swift's favorite songs. If you Google it, you'll see her on stage. She called Tal on stage. She played Vancouver, and this is one of her favorite Canadian songs. So this is for the ladies. Go ahead.
Anyway, yeah, I wrote this, recorded it, and I had a good year there in 1999. So this is She's So High.
She's blood, flesh and bone, no talks or silicone. She's touch and smell, sight, taste and sound. It's all I want now. Yeah. agrees immediately, 'cause what she says sounds so unreal. 'Cause somehow when you're feeling anything should happen, I know where I belong, but nothing's gonna happen.
Mid-60s, the Kingsman Louie Louie tour. We were on Scepter Records. We went to Scepter Studios. It was amazing. Won by Florence Greenberg. She managed the Shirelles. She wrote Soldier Boy for the Shirelles. We got to back the Shirelles. We backed the Crystals, the Ronettes. Her songwriters in-house were Burt Bacharach and Hal David, Nick Ashford, Valerie Simpson. We met them all and hung out with them. Recorded some great music. And Florence's son, Stanley Greenberg, was the engineer on the sessions for Dionne Warwick and for us. The thing that amazed me is he was blind. So he'd sit there, twist the knobs, and get a perfect sound on our records. And the Beatles had a song out called Paperback Writer. And I wanted to write a song by Paperback Writer, The Day in the Life of a Guy. Just like Johnny B. Goode, The Day in the Life of a Guy, written decades before by Chuck Berry. And I wanted to write a song. And every day, Stanley, this is like August in New York, it's like 90 above, 90 humidity. Stanley would wear a white collar, button down, a tweed jacket with leather patches, a tweed tie, tweed pants with pleats in them. Remember those pants with pleats? And those weird brogue shoes. I say, Stanley, why do you dress like that? We're all wearing cutoffs and flip-flops like it's 90 above out. And he said, I want to look like the best producer in the world, George Martin. And I said, well, you look like George Martin. You look really great. Stanley had to leave this, and I said, I want to write a song about you. And I'm going to call it White Collar Worker, because he wore a white button-down collar. And it's going to be my paperback writer. So you leave the studio every day at 10. You go home, obviously. Do you live downtown New York? He said, no, I have to take the train. I said, well, how do you do that? He said, well, I walk to Grand Central Station. I said, well, I want to come with you because I want to write a song. I want to see what's happening. And so we go out the studio. It's like 10 after 10 at night. He's got a white cane. I say, so how do you find Grand Central Station? And he's saying, like, don't try to help me. I do this every night. You want to take his arm. And he says, well, I go out and I turn right and I count 852 steps. And then I hear beep, beep, the little traffic signal. Then I walk 150 steps that way and hear another beep, beep. And I walk and I'm walking with this guy. I'm amazed we get to Grand Central Station. But it's like 10:20 now, 10:25. The streets are empty. Everybody's in the theaters or Madison Square Gardens. And the streets are absolutely empty. So we get there and I say, Stanley, there's nothing to write about. I guess I don't have a song. You're going to take the train, and when do you come back? He said, I take the 8:15 to the city. I go, oh, okay, and then when do you get here? He said, I get here about 20 to 9, I walk to work, I start my slaving job to get my pay, and I go, oh, it sounds like there's a song there. So I write this song, and everybody hates this song. It's called White Collar Worker. It's a copy. A paperback writer, but the verses are the same. Everybody likes the verses, which are, you'll know these. They get up in the morning from the alarm clock's warning, take the 8:15 to the city. There's a whistle up above and people pushing, people shoving, and the girls who try to look pretty. And if your train's on time, you can get to work by 9 and start your slaving job to get your pay. If you ever get annoyed, look at me, I'm self-employed, and I love to work at nothing all. Here's the part you don't know. I'm so excited. I played that for Burton Cummings. He says, gag me with a drumstick. We'll never do that song. We're going to get sued by Lennon and McCartney. I go, great, we get to meet them. So that song, White Collar Worker, never gets on. But guess who album? It misses the first album, the second, the third album. I leave. I start a band called Brave Belt that evolves into BTO, Backward Turn Overdrive. It doesn't make the first album or the second or the third, which becomes Brave Belt 1. I still have this song on a little shelf of my favorite things next to my heart, the lyrics to White Collar Worker. And I know I need something else. So on a certain gig, on a certain night, driving over the bridge in Vancouver, Daryl B, our buddy's on the radio, goes, this is Daryl B on CFUN Radio, we're taking care of business. I go, what a great song title. And it's just like if you have a good dream, you gotta write it down. So I'm looking for my songwriting kit in my car, which you all have. It's a smashed crayon and a McDonald's napkin. I write all my ideas down on this, and I write it on taking care of business so I don't forget it. So we get to the gig that night. It's Saturday night. We've been playing Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. 5 50-minute sets a night. And it's the last set Saturday night, and the guy wants to sell his drinks. It's a bar. And Fred Turner comes up to me and he says, I can't sing anymore. You gotta sing the last set. So he's telling me I have to sing the last set. So I think, gee, I don't know that many songs. Like, I had a great singer like Burton Cummings and a singer like Fred Turner in BTO, so I don't know that many songs. But at the time, Carlos Santana has a song called Oye Como Va. So I figured, I don't know any Spanish, but nobody in Vancouver knows any Spanish. My mother's Ukrainian, that's why I was taught, given the violin, to play polkas at her Ukrainian house parties. And so I'm gonna do Oyo Komova, Ukrainian style, and see if I can get the people dancing, because nobody's dancing. So I start. This is Ukrainian style. Oye Komova. Dancing, the club owner is going yes, yes, and he's going like this, which is TV talk for keep it going, keep them dancing, because if you stop playing, they sit down and the battle starts all over again. So I'm wondering, what am I going to do? And a light bulb goes on the other side of my head and goes, this is your big chance for White Collar Worker. The band is your hostage on stage. They can't say no. They've said no for 4 albums. This is your big chance. So don't put in the White Collar Worker part. Put in taking care of business, see how it fits. So I start, you can dance here, you can dance. It's better near the end. Same lyrics. They get up in the morning from the alarm clocks, 8:50 to the city. When I get to the middle, I don't go, White Collar Worker. I go, taking care of business every day. Taking care of business every way. Taking care of business. It's all mine. Taking care of business. Working overtime. Workout. We played that for 30 minutes. They danced all night long. When we stopped singing it, my brother kept the kick drum going and they all sang taking care of business. So we go to record it 2 weeks later. Fred Turner says, I want you to sing this and stop doing the silly Oye Como Va pierogi song. Sing our own song. So I sang this song once, taking care of business. It was like we've been in the studio 14 hours. I sang it once. I had a bad throat. It's a really terrible vocal. The song speeds up and slows down. We don't care. It's an album cut. As I'm about to leave the studio, there's a knock at the door. I open the door and there's a guy standing there in an army fatigue suit with an army hat, a big frizzy black beard and frizzy black hair, and he's holding 3 pizzas. And he said, did you guys order the pizzas? And I said, no, go down the hall. So down the hall, we were in A. Down in B, Steve Miller was recording Fly Like an Eagle album. And further down the hall, War was doing Why Can't We Be Friends album. So he comes back about 10 minutes later, no pizza, so we obviously delivered them down the hall. And he knocks on the door again. I said, yeah, can we help you? He says, well, are you guys, it looks like you're leaving. We're putting on our coats. I said, yeah, we've been here like 14, 15 hours. We're going back to our hotel to sleep. And he says, I've been standing outside the door listening to this song, taking care of business. And I'm not really just a pizza delivery guy. I only deliver at the end of the month when I can't pay my rent. I'm a piano player. can I play piano on this song? Like, what, are you kidding? I'd rather have Elton John or Little Richard, but they're in LA going crazy. So you're here right now, so the moment is now. We'll give you one take. Normally when you're having a piano, you tune it up. But you didn't have a piano, so the piano's out of tune. We throw on a mic cover to the say the guy, you got one take. He plays it once, he goes home delivering pizza, we go home and sleep. The next day we come back to the studio, the head of our label flies in. Comes in one day early. He's not supposed to come in. Comes in one day early. And he says, let me hear the album. So I say to the engineer, do not play Taking Care of Business piano, because we haven't heard it back. It might be terrible. So he plays it without the piano. And halfway through, he pushes up the piano, and it comes in. And Charlie Fatch, the head of our label, jumps out of his chair and goes, that is amazing. BTO with a piano? That's phenomenal. You guys are all nuts because you and the Doobies and Frampton and ZZ Top, you're all guitars, bass, and drums, and Elton John owns AM and FM radio because of the piano. You having a piano is going to get you Elton John real estate on Top 40 radio. Let's hear the whole track again. So we play the whole track again, and he goes crazy. He says, I love this. Let's leave it the way it is. Who's playing the piano? I say, a pizza delivery guy. He says, no, seriously, who's playing the bloody piano? I said, seriously, it's a pizza delivery guy. He goes, oh my God, we gotta find out who this guy is. It's gotta be in the union. We gotta give him credit, or this is gonna be a party song. You're gonna be playing this every night for the rest of your life. I go, you gotta be kidding. And he says, we gotta find this guy. So stop everything. So I get the yellow pages. I take some to the lady at the front, and I say, okay, you start at Antonio's. I'll go halfway through to Mario's. I phone every Italian pizza place within three blocks of the studio and see if they have a delivery guy that looks like Fidel Castro. So we get lucky. We get lucky. I get a guy, and they go, yeah, he's not really our delivery boy. And I said, yeah, he's just a piano player that delivers the last 2 days of the month when he can't pay his rent. What's his name? Well, we can't give employees names over the phone. Is he working today? Yeah, he starts at 6. Send him down. What kind of pizza do you want? Send yesterday's pizza. We don't care. We just want the guy. So he comes in. His name is Norman Durkee. That's the piano you hear on Taking Care of Business. One take by a pizza delivery guy. That was Norman Durkee's big claim to fame. 2 years later, he was Bette Midler's musical director on her first North American tour. And when I played with Ringo Starr's All-Star Band in 95, our tour ended at the Greek Theater in LA, and Norman Durkee was the pianist for the LA Philharmonic. Now you can stand up. Now I'm going to take care of some real business. Taylor's on the piano. I'm waiting for the stool to vanish. Here it goes. You want to dance? This is your chance. you automatic Canadian citizenship. Thank you.
from me.